So they're all tributes to the people that I love and who have given me so much love.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Well, hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Gareth Crispin, editor of Premier Next Gen, the online magazine for Christian parents. The Profile is the show where we sit down with someone in the limelight to hear more about their life and faith. Today on the show, I have the great pleasure of speaking to somebody with one of the most eclectic life stories you'll ever come across. Born in Switzerland, educated in the UK, lived and worked in France as a clinical psychologist, now in the UK as a singer, songwriter, art collector and philanthropist who somewhere along the line found time to get married and have two children. Her father was Gilbert de Botton, a famous global financier. Her grandmother was a spy and her brother is Alain de Botton, the well-known British philosopher. My guest today is Miel de Botton. Welcome, Miel, to The Profile.
Thank you so much, Karen. Thank you.
Now, Miel, even that brief high-level summary of your life made me feel a little bit dizzy, the amount of things that you've done. Now, do you think you always knew it would be like that? Or did you ever think that you'd settle down in one place doing one thing?
I really did originally, you know, because we were in this idyllic, quiet place in Switzerland. I thought I was going to lead a very stable life. I didn't know what I was going to do, but that's how I felt. And then I got whisked off to boarding school in the UK. Then I thought I wanted to be a psychiatrist, but I knew I didn't want to do the medical part. So that was from very early on something that, you know, was a purpose in for me. And I also sang songs to my friends at boarding school in French, but I didn't think that was going to be, you know, a career. And I'm just so profoundly happy that I was able to go into this career because this is where I feel most happy, you know.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to coming back in a bit to talking about your music. But let's just briefly go back to that early childhood. We like to get a few details of our guests for our audience. What was it like growing up then in the de Botton family? If we go right back to days in Switzerland, then work through to boarding school and things like that.
What was it like? I mean, I think it was a very studious feeling of where things were well organized, well balanced. It was a little bit upstairs, downstairs, in terms of us being downstairs, the kids with the nanny and the parents upstairs. And it was a bit of a Victorian thing where children would be seen and not heard that much. we were well dressed for the guests and had to say goodnight to the guests and then we disappeared. It was that kind of thing. And we were brought up to be very polite and all of that. We were learning English from probably the age of 10, both of us having private lessons because they didn't teach that at school yet, actually.
And where did faith come into the equation in your early years? Your parents were Jewish, secular Jews, is that right?
Yes, I mean, my mum was originally Christian and converted to Judaism to marry my dad, but her father was Jewish, her mother was non-Jewish, and they were very secular. In fact, they were, I would say, you know, violently atheist to the extent that they actually, because I was the only one who believed in the family. And I think I may have been inspired by my nanny, who was with us for 8 years, who was very devout, Catholic, wonderful Swiss lady who's still alive. We go and visit her every year. She's 95 now and lives in Ennetmoor, it's a little village near Lucerne. Anyway, but so, yeah, I was the only one who had this faith, and I would sort of sit in the garden and look at the sun and feel this force, and it was this wonderful feeling. But my parents would literally make fun of me and would go, "What is this? You know, how can you believe in God? You know, how sweet I'd say." But so that was how it was, really.
So that's really interesting. So no prompting from your parents. In fact, the opposite. Maybe encouragement from your nanny. Have you got any more of a sense of where it actually came from? Was it something that just emerged naturally within you, or were there some moments where you remember, oh, this was a moment of discovery for me?
No, I do remember that one moment, sort of looking at the sun, being in the garden, thinking, there is this force, I can feel it, I'm sure of it. And then it sort of accompanied me, you know, my whole life, apart from I did lose my faith when my dad died, because that was so horrible and brutal and sudden that I thought I felt the belief had gone. And I then understood my parents, interestingly enough, because they had each lost their adored parent very young. And I believe that's how they lost their faith. But mine did come back, thank goodness, thank God. But it took about 2 years for it to return, actually, because it was so, I felt so lost. Yeah.
How did it come back then? What can you narrate that sort of process?
I'm not exactly sure I remember. It's a bit of a, you know, it was a bit of a whirlwind that time, to be honest. You know, we had moved countries because we were moving countries to be closer to my dad, partly. And my husband at the time, I had a job in the UK because we would had spent 10 years in Paris where I was practicing as a clinical psychologist. And we had my son, Zachary, who was 1 year old. And my dad died the day before we were meant to move. Literally, wow. 3 in the morning, we get a phone call from my stepmother saying this has happened. And I was like, oh my God. And then so we had to move, and we moved, and our house wasn't ready, and we had to stay in a hotel. So literally everything I had lost, I felt I had lost so much in my life in one go. I can't tell you how it came back. I think it was just a progressive thing, but I was not well for quite a while, to be honest.
Okay, well, that's great that it came back over a couple of years. Yeah, just going back then into your early years, your parents obviously didn't have much time for your emerging faith. I think I even read somewhere that you've celebrated Christmas in secret. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I mean, again, it wasn't so much in secret in the sense that I was just the only one doing it, and I would get a little tree in my room and celebrate it by myself. And again, they would just laugh. They would just laugh at me. But it wasn't a nice feeling to be laughed at like that, to be honest. You know, but I didn't mind. It didn't make me lose my faith.
That's quite an extraordinary thing for a young child to be in a family and the wider family in that setting, have that experience, and then be laughed at, but then not that bother them. That's quite a striking story.
Yeah, I mean, I think my faith is really very, very strong. And maybe it's as if God has concentrated all the faith in the family for generations in me. Do you know what I mean? Because literally, I feel like I'm praying every moment of the day. And I'm really, really connected. So maybe that's what's happened. You know, I don't know.
You mentioned your brother and the upstairs downstairs, so you're obviously very close to your brother. I've read a couple of his books, actually. He's a very good communicator, making philosophy exceptionally accessible to the rest of us. But he is obviously quite atheistic as well in his writing. And how did that play out in you're still quite close to him? That wasn't a problem growing up?
No, not at all, really. I mean, it's just, the difficulty is that when he is in a bit of a difficult place, I want to sort of reassure him and speak in words of that include God. And I know he doesn't believe. So I have to find other words to say, you know, higher forces or things like that, which is probably quite good for me in terms of communication, as you're saying. But that's the only thing, and we still manage to support each other and, you know, love each other throughout, you know.
Fantastic. Now I read that initially you studied law at Oxford. Was that right? Oxford?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then went on to become a clinical psychologist. Why did you take that path? Was that something you felt was laid out for you, or you really did want to become a lawyer? What was the reasoning behind all that?
So initially, it's quite funny because my dad and I used to have passionate arguments about Israel and Palestine already then. You know, I was very pro peace and he wasn't so sure anyway. And he said, oh, you're very good at arguing. I think you should become a lawyer. And I was very lost at the time. And I really looked up to him and I thought, oh, he must be right. So that's what I did. And then I really thought my real self was emerging. I thought, this is really not for me. I find this very dull, even though it has served me now. Finally, in my life, I'm really grateful to him. I'm thinking, actually, it's really serving me now, Daddy. but at the time, I thought, oh, no. So I asked to change. I did some other papers in moral and political philosophy. I added it on to my law degree. So that was interesting. And then afterwards I said, because he said, you must finish your degree. You must finish this. I'm not letting you change halfway through. So I said, okay. So I slogged through. Anyway, and then I said to him, look, Daddy, I'm serious about this. Would you please finance me? I want to do psychology. That's what I want to do. And he said, yes. But that was a further 5-year degree. So I've got 8 years of further education under my belt. But that's what it takes to qualify. Well, in most countries, actually, nowadays, 5 years. So that was, a slog, but it was in Paris and lots of new people and young. They were younger than me, obviously, because I was a graduate. And, it was lovely being in Paris as a student, and walking by the banks of the Seine. And, I've written a song about Paris because I love it so much. And no, it was wonderful, wonderful time.
Great. Now, winding the clock towards today, we're going to talk about your music in just a bit. But in terms of your philanthropy, I'm very interested to know what your interests are and why those are your interests, and also where your faith and your values plays into that.
Well, it's very interesting question. Yesterday, I met with a wonderful lady who runs something called Synchronicity Earth. And I had a charity meeting with her, and I do this kind of thing as much as I can. They're engaged in freshwater projects, for example, in Papua New Guinea, in the Congo, in the Amazon. I'm fascinated with all this because I'm really just absolutely an adept of nature. I love nature. This was started very early on because my best friend at school, somebody called Jean-Christophe Duméril, his father was one of the directors of WWF. And I've been very involved since then, literally. Well, not since then. There was a bit of a gap. but I've been very involved with WWF. And obviously, it's quite concerning. It is concerning, deforestation and everything I was talking about with this lady yesterday. And it's, so there's so much to do. And it gives me huge purpose. And also all other kinds of charities. I'm interested in the arts. Obviously, I've been brought up that way. So I try to support, whether it be the Tate, the National Gallery, the National Portrait Gallery, the Courtauld, all these places. And the sciences. My family also supported the sciences majorly. Yeah, also the Jerusalem Foundation, which encourages peace between Israel and Palestinians, Israelis and Palestinians. I've continued to support that. That was started by my father and mother. So it's a broad gamut of things. Yeah.
And in terms of your faith, how does that play into your philanthropy?
I mean, it's, it's essential. It's a driving force, in terms of, wanting the world to be a better place, really,
I noticed that you did a song for WWF. Was it I Was Given Nature? That was your song for WWF. And that was interesting to me because the idea of something being given to you, I wondered if that was an allusion to your faith in any way. I mean, certainly the idea that God created the world and actually we're stewards of that runs both through the Jewish and Christian traditions in a very strong way. We don't actually own it; we're just stewards of it. And so I don't know if that was in the back of your mind at some point.
Absolutely. I love that question. I mean, I think, to me, we've been given everything. Our body is a gift as well. Our body, our whole self. I do feel this notion of service to God is really, really speaks to me. And I just find more and more, I find out how we're connected to nature. For example, I now have a palm tree in my room. I wake up, completely clear, whereas before I did used to wake up bunged up, And this was an amazing discovery because I thought, this is crazy that we're deforesting and these trees are literally keeping us alive. I feel connected, definitely.
Fantastic. Let's turn to your music. Obviously, in the last 10 years, this has become a really big part of your life. So two albums in the last 10 years and now your EP coming out in, is it three parts it's coming out in?
Yeah, so it's an album called Loved Ones, which is divided into volumes, exactly, yeah.
Fantastic. So before digging into some of the specific tracks, which I would like to do in just a second, can you just tell us what you're trying to do with your music in terms of the lyrics and the music itself and how your faith and values can be seen in that?
I mean, healing is the primary wish, you know. And I think, for example, the song that I just brought out on my for my mum, which is in her native language, again, I was trying to connect with her in the best way possible, and it's a tribute to her and everything she's done, in the fact that we were born in the first place. She had to persevere so much, and obviously raising us, and to my father as well. So they're all tributes to the people that I love and who have given me so much love. So that, you know, seems to be very much well, it's probably a Christian ethos, isn't it? But well, I think both books in the Bible agree with this, I'm sure. But yeah, so I think primary wish is healing of others and also of myself, because, for example, the song to my father, I never thought of it this way, but I really cried a lot because as I said, you know, it was a brutal passing. So I think that was a healing of me in the process, you know.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
There's a song called Forever Man. I don't know if you've listened to that. There's a lovely, that's out now, but we're going to have a lovely animation coming out to go with that, which is just superb. This man called Mertkan in Turkey. He's wonderful. And it's all about, that's all about ideal romantic love and what I look for in this notion of forever, which, you know, is many rom-coms, but so many people these days are, you know, grown a bit cynical about that, and I'm really not cynical at all about it.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the irony with a lot of these rom-coms that are actually written in a secular worldview but have this idea of forever, and you're thinking, well, in a secular worldview there is no forever, and so it's something that people want, but actually it's something that their worldview doesn't give them, which is, you know, a slight tension, I guess, in their lives. But looking back at some of your tracks then, in particular, so Hit Song is a real earworm. It was going round and round in my head the last few days. And it looked like you had lots of fun, you and a lot of other people, a lot of your friends having a lot of fun making that. An autobiographical piece, the video seems to make that clear. So there's a young Miel going round with and her notebook around London, presumably writing a song that she wants to sing at some point, which she then sees her future self singing. Have I interpreted it correctly?
Yeah, but of course it is supposed to be relatable to the other people who dream these things, you know. It's any little girl with a dream of any kind and any passion project, really. You know, we're guided to go towards these, to explore these passion projects, because the talent is within us and God wants us to develop that, really. That's the idea.
You're supporting Simply Red in Paris soon, I hear.
Yes. This is very exciting. On the 19th of November at the Accor Arena, which is huge. It used to be Bercy. I think it's 11 to 14,000 people, depending on how they do it. I opened for them in Zurich at the Hallenstadion in 2022. That was 11,000 people. And yeah, it was terrifying and joyful at the same time, and I'm delighted that to do it again in Paris, which I love, you know, and I'm going to sing lots and lots of French songs, and I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled, and I hope many of your listeners, I hope people can come, and I think we're going to try and do a live stream, actually, so we'll post it on the social, so that would be really wonderful if people can join in the fun, hopefully.
And in amongst all of that, putting out your album and then performing in front of thousands of people with Simply Red, supporting them. How do you keep yourself grounded? You know, what sort of values and what aspects of your faith can help you? If it was me, I guess my head might just completely go up into the sky. And yeah, how do you keep yourself grounded?
Well, you know, it does tend to do that sometimes. And I pray for help. That's what happens. And walks in nature. But I'm appealing to God for help all the time. And I think I believe he's helping me, which is wonderful. And even on stage, I feel sometimes if I forget a word or something, I feel that I'm channeling words from God. So it's just unbelievably helpful.
Fantastic. Now, as editor of Premier Next Gen, I'm always interested in any aspect of parenting that we can reflect on. So I'd like to spend a bit of time talking about your own journey as a parent. So you have two children now grown up, is that correct?
Absolutely. So yeah, my son Zachary is 26 and my daughter Talia is 22.
Wonderful. So overall, over the last 26 years, what's been your overall experience at a high level, overall experience of being a mother? What sort of words would you use to describe the feeling and the emotions?
I mean, again, it was very challenging for me. I had this idealized view of what mothering was, and I never really had any contact with children around me. We just didn't have any children around us. So it came as a massive shock when I first had Zachary. And especially, like I told you, a year on, I was working when Zachary was 6 months. So I was, you know, trying to do that challenge of mixing the two. And then we moved to London and had this terrible tragedy with my dad. So it was a really rough start, to be honest. And I stopped working actually at that point for a few years because I couldn't manage everything, and had to get myself, and that's the 4 years between Talia and Zachary, because I just couldn't manage any closer, that's for sure. But you know, they were both a huge joy, and my whole pregnancies I was just so happy to be pregnant and happy to have these kids, and I really am now. But they were both, it was a challenging ride, you know, and obviously right now they're stable, and one prays for everything to continue to be well. My son is a surf instructor. He's a very free spirit and loves nature and is actually having the van life right now in Scotland. And my daughter is studying in the States, in LA, and she's loving it. She's doing really, really well. And she never was an A student before, but she completely is an A student now. So yeah, it's been really, again, challenging, but the rewards are very fruitful. But I loved seeing the blossoming of these children. I never forced them to, when they didn't want to wear clothes, I never forced, you know, didn't want to wear clothes that I chose. I didn't force them, things like that. I loved seeing that independence because I never had that. But of course, you then had the challenge that they could be rude at times, and you had to learn. I had to learn to set firm boundaries, and for those boundaries to feel okay. And I had trouble doing that because I remembered how, you know, strict my parents were, and so I had gone to the other extreme. And then I realized, no, I have to recalibrate a bit here, you know. So that was kind of, you know, some of the journey, yeah.
And presumably the other difference is that they were growing up in a family where their parents weren't atheist. So how did you try and, you know, nurture faith in your children? How did you communicate faith differently to how your parents had approached it?
Well, I have to tell you that I failed miserably because they both are atheists. I don't know how this happened, because I did take them to, we did every Christian festival, every Jewish festival. I took them to synagogue. They had church at school. But somehow they both turned out to be atheists, to my despair. But anyway, I can't do anything about it. But, you know, children rebel, right? So, and they know that, I mean, I'm so into it. They probably had to rebel against that. I don't know.
In the same way that maybe you had done something differently from your parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we hear quite a lot now of the quiet revival, where especially young men are turning back to the church, and Bible sales are up for that kind of age category. So there's a lot of research around that right now in the last year or two. So maybe there'll be another turnaround.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, I would love that. I would love that. I mean, my brother now seems to be talking more, you know, he did write a book about religion and how he actually wanted some of the values of religion. And he seems to be occasionally saying that he prays. So I was like, you pray? And like, so yeah, so you never know how things will turn, you know?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people saying that there is a significant cultural moment about to come upon us because of that idea that your brother's tilting out, that people want something, but they're thinking that it doesn't exist. So they're in a tension. They don't quite know how to deal with it. And so, yeah, there's an opportunity for people to discuss matters of faith much more openly. If you could give, this is my last question. If you could give a piece of advice, Miao, to yourself the day before your first child was born, what would it be?
Don't panic. Don't panic. It's going to be all right. Probably. And to God, you know, that would be, you know, he's there for you. And this is happening for a reason, actually, because he was born, my son was born on the 27th, which is a very lucky number going through our family. I'm born on the 27th of another month of February, but there are 27s everywhere whenever reassurance is needed. So already there was, I think, a spiritual, you know, symbol and reassuring sign from God, you know.
Okay, so just like the mug says, keep calm and carry on. That was the wartime that you're saying, don't panic and pray. Is that a good summary?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Miao de Botton, it's been absolutely fantastic to hear from you today. I really hope that the album goes really well. I really hope that supporting Simply Red in November goes really well too. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Gareth. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.